Welcome to another episode of Queerpreneurs Unleashed. I'm your host, Dustin Balcom, and I get the opportunity and pleasure of chatting with some pretty cool, maybe outside of today, 2S LGBT plus entrepreneurs. today we were recording on Coast Salish territory of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish peoples. We honor and respect the land on which we work, play, and live. And today I have a friend I haven't seen in a long time.
Friend and celebrity.
Wannabe celebrity was always the term. Peter Breeze, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I don't think you hesitated for a second once I asked,
did you? No, you know what? Any opportunity to talk for an hour about myself. I mean, you don't get very many opportunities to do that, to be honest.
Really?
Well, I mean, I talk to Evan about myself all the time.
So he selectively listens.
I'm excited, yeah.
I don't think I've seen you since you left Kelowna, really.
That's a long time. Yeah. Like, maybe... Let's see, I was in Kelowna for 2 years, in Toronto for 5 years, so 7 years. Really? We haven't seen each other?
Not in person, because we did that one when Sparkle and I were on your podcast one time.
Right, Kelowna-fornia. Yeah. That was a good episode. The Homer Simpson of drag.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's still pretty accurate.
Yes. It's been a long time. Nice to see you.
You too. All right, so I always like to start and talk a bit about the person and who they like, how you identify. So tell me, how do you identify?
I identify as a gay man. Yeah. This question is interesting always, because I think if it was like 10, maybe not 10 years earlier, but if the gender conversation was happening when I was a teenager, I wonder if that would have changed my identity back then, because in my 20s, not so much in my teens, in my 20s, I was very gender neutral in how I presented. I don't know if it's how I felt on the inside, but whenever somebody asked me that, I flash back to when I was 20, and I'm like, what would 20-year-old Peter, how would he answer that? Yeah.
Well, and today with things being probably more accepted too, right?
Even with Drag Race being on TV and like queer pop stars, I wonder how, there was no option, right? It was like gay man. True. That's all I saw. Yeah. I mean, it was Will and Grace, right? So that was the only option. And I was like, I'm not Jack, even though I was totally Jack. So yeah. It's come a long way, definitely.
Love it. So tell me a bit about how you kind of came to the realization that you were queer or a gay man.
Lordy. Okay, well, you know what? Like, first memory I have that in retrospect was like, ding, 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 would have been Spice Girls.
Okay.
Coming out and learning all their dances, dressing up like Ginger Spice, and Shania Twain, Any Man of Mine. So when I came out to my mom... she wasn't surprised, and she referred back to me dancing to Any Man of Mine, tucking up my shirt, wearing the cowboy boots. So I did come out, like, understanding I was gay was actually a longer process than being flamboyant and feminine, because that's just who I am. So it was never a becoming. I just was like that. Had a really supportive family, so I just was always, I think, obviously from the outside, at least different.
Right.
And I always felt different. But it wasn't until I was like maybe grade 8, I was like, you know, looking at the other boys and I'm like, look at his butt. And that's sort of the confusing part that comes together. Watching Britney and like being drawn to her and assuming that that was sexual. But then when you compared it to how I was thinking about like, I don't know, Jonathan Taylor Thomas, you remember him? He was like on Home Improvement, right? And I had his poster on my wall, and I'm like, I just think he's cool. But in retrospect, I think it was more...
physical attraction.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a slow, the sexual part, I didn't quite grasp right away.
And so you mentioned you came out, when you about coming out to your mom. How old were you when you came out?
I came out twice. Oh. I know, I came out once in grade 10, because I was always teased for being gay. Truly in my heart, I did soul searching and I was like, I'm not gay. I am not attracted to men.
Okay.
I joined Callaway Live, which was performing arts. It's Callaway Park is the theme park outside of where I'm from.
That's what I was thinking when I heard that.
I like to say it's the Mickey Mouse Club of Calgary. dancing and singing all summer, rehearsing all during the school year.
Sorry, I'm just going back to wannabe celebrity.
Yeah, I will compare myself to Britney often, and same as Madonna, and maybe Paris, maybe Courtney Love.
Wannabe celebrity.
Yes,
that's the theme of this podcast.
You have to believe it. If you don't believe it, nobody else will.
Manifest.
So, Manifest Destiny. So that was when I was in Callaway Live, the first time I was around a gay person. His name was Leland. And I remember just being, I guess, awestruck that there was somebody my age who was out of the closet. And at that point, around that, he asked me to be his boyfriend on ICQ. Uh-oh, remember the little chat? And I came out as bisexual without really understanding what it meant, but because I was in a supportive community for the first time. Mm-hmm. And then I went back into the closet after that because I got a few girlfriends that I really liked. And I felt I must be attracted to both and maybe still am, not have fully explored the straight side.
Right.
So when I came out for real, it was end of high school because I had a boyfriend. And I remember when I kissed him the first time, it was like, oh, my God, this is what was missing with the girls, yeah. right? I liked the girls, but when I kissed the boy, I was like, oh, this is like, you can't even compare. And when I came out the second time, it was definitely more emotional. I remember crying, talking to my mom, talking to my, like, best friends. Nobody was surprised. But when you really realize that, it's a big thing. Regardless of how flamboyant you might be and how you might be perceived. Because you are like, fuck, the rest of my life. Like, this is going to dictate a lot of what happens to me. So high school, I guess it was like an in-and-out journey. Yeah.
There's something newer I've added in some of the more recent podcasts. But what's something that might be unique about you that most people won't know?
I mean...
I feel like you're pretty open book.
Yeah, that I am actually calm behind closed doors. I don't know. Let's see.
We're not supposed to lie.
I know. What is something that people might not know about me? I mean, I've always come across as a really confident person, but I've had pretty crippling anxiety and insecurity. Yeah. And I think that's why my persona was always over the top. So when people say to me, especially back when I was in the club, you're so confident. And as some guys that I've reconnected with now that I'm here in Vancouver, like, you were so shameless about who you were. And it was so inspiring because, you know, they were coming into their own, on their own time, in their own way. But when I look back, I'm like, I was just scared. And that was my defense mechanism to be like over the top. So yeah. People may be surprised to hear that about me. I'm also really spiritual, but if you listen to my podcast, you would know that,
right.
Which I find it hard to find other gay men who are interested in that because I think we've been ostracized by religion, but that doesn't have to be spirituality.
I have two questions from that.
Okay. What would you know me pretty well. What would you say is something that when you're getting to know me, you're surprised by?
Fuck, that was like during my drinking years. I don't remember those.
That was only last week, honey.
No, year. I told you that, you fucker.
I know.
So I want to talk on the anxiety piece. Yeah. How, like, what have you done to overcome that?
I still have it.
So what do you do to overcome
it? Overcome it? So meditation is huge. I meditate every single morning, every single morning for 20 minutes. When I'm feeling extremely overwhelmed, I do multiple meditations a day. So that sets the tone. It doesn't cure anxiety, but what it does is it creates a buffer between like a trigger and then me spiraling. That's really helpful. Not drinking or doing drugs is like a huge game changer.
Yeah.
And medication.
Oh.
Yeah.
There you go. sometimes that's what you need, right?
Yeah, because I feel like, too, the acceptance of, like, anxiety, sometimes your brain is just like that. It might not be all environmental. You may have been born with a brain that is more prone to anxiety or depression, and it's okay to fix that with a pill or, like, help tame it.
Totally. Well, yeah. And sometimes you just need it, right? Because there's chemical imbalances or whatever the case may be, and sometimes you need something just to level it.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? So that was one question I had from what you were sharing. Yeah. And the second part is to share more about the spirituality piece and what that actually means to you.
I love talking about this. I have, since a very young age, I think okay, my brain is going really fast right now. There's a few things. One, being really young and having big dreams and feeling like there's a big destiny. I'm going to be a star, as you know.
Yes, no want to be a celebrity. This has been ongoing since I met
him. I mean, since I, like,
well, since I met, yes.
Yes. You and everybody else that I've ever met. I think when you're an artist or you're young and you feel called to something, it gives you a sense of something greater than you. Right. You're being pulled towards something. You feel like you're a small piece in a big picture. My dad also died when I was really young. So you compare feeling like you have a destiny to dealing with death at a young age.
Right.
Those two things made me open to believing in something. I asked my mom to go to church. She never brought me, just because we weren't a religious family. So my spirituality never came from religion.
Okay.
It was an internal conversation or feeling that I was considering about like life, God, whatever. And then this is the crazy. Well, I don't, it's not crazy to me, but pop culture, my obsession with pop culture,
yes.
Crazy obsession with, like, you know, like the Lindsay, Britney, Paris years, a crazy tabloid culture had a really big effect on me. And being in the club scene had a really big effect on me because I felt like I was seeing myself in those young girls. I was partying hard. They were partying hard. I really wanted to be famous. They were so famous. And I was also, at the same time, building a reputation in the club. So I really felt like my life was exactly like Britney's at that time.
Okay.
When you're having self-actualization in nightlife, it can actually be really profound, even if you are drinking and doing drugs, because it's the first time you feel a sense of community. Yeah. You're getting a sense of who you can be on like a grander scale. And that just enforced what I believed when I was a kid of like, there is something bigger than me. And the third piece, to wrap it all up, is being sober. Like when I first got sober and I was going to 12-step meetings, there was a big spiritual component to that. And I came in with some spirituality, but then when I went through that process, it really like, it expanded it. And I think the foundation got stronger. Yeah.
And so if someone is confusing religion and spirituality, because they can, as you mentioned, can be different, how would you define that?
Religion is man-made.
Okay.
And spirituality is something that is natural inside of you. So you can wake up every day and do exercises. You can do push-ups. You can go for walks. And that's a natural way to get exercise.
Right.
Or you can go to the gym and you can pay for a trainer to tell you what to eat, how to work out, and how to change your life. So religion can be powerful for some people, but I don't trust fully anything that's completely man-made. And I think religion ultimately is a tool to control people, ultimately. So
basically a cult.
Yeah, exactly. When I watch those true crime documentaries about the cults, I'm like, what is the difference? Yeah, there's like trigger warning, like sexual misconduct, like corrupted white men, basically, taking advantage of people who are vulnerable, either financially, socio and economically, or like emotionally.
Big words
are
hard.
Smart. Yeah, it's the same. Like. Okay. Yeah, so that's the difference. Something naturally inside of you versus an institution.
Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough. I like that.
Thank you.
It's a good way to do it. I think this is actually the first time that we've really broached into spirituality and religion in the podcast.
Because, like the one thing that a lot of queer folks have to overcome if they feel called to spirituality is religion, because you are at such a young age made to feel like there is no place for you. So if you are like me and you're young and you feel like maybe there is a God, or maybe there is something after you die, or maybe there is like a universal power, you have to find your people yourself, and you have to define it for yourself. So yeah, fuck religion.
That's just a nice ending to it. Fuck religion. That'll be the there's slogan nothing against for episode.
It. Some of my best friends are Christians, but that's just my feeling about it. Yeah.
I love it. How do you balance your personal identity and your professional persona?
I don't think they're that different. No. I mean, I, from a young age, leveraged being gay to get opportunity, create opportunity. When I was coming out, the flamboyant gay guy was very much an accessory in pop culture. Everybody wanted to have a gay best friend, take you shopping, do your hair. So I leaned into that and I got jobs. And again, like going back to my persona being my defense mechanism, if you can push your, for me, when I sort of wore my sexuality on my sleeve, it actually opened doors for me. And I think maybe because people were uncomfortable and didn't know what to do, so they just kept saying yes. But I think now, like in my late 30s, I definitely am more aware of boundaries and maybe don't share everything right away. be an open book and like being authentic, but not everybody needs to know every detail. So I think professionally, I just try and, you know, keep more balance and boundaries, I would say.
Yeah, just don't barf it out all at
exactly.
once.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Find don't need balance. To do that. Hold it's, your it's, cards close to your chest yeah. sometimes.
Well, and it's hard sometimes too, because you work with people that you know and friends and all that, like mm-hmm. how to find that balance sometimes.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure.
So, all right. So now I want to talk a bit more on the entrepreneurial side of things.
Yes.
So I know you wear a few hats, and I mean, that's how we became friends mm-hmm. was organizing events back yep. in Kelowna.
Yes.
And then you fucked off and left for Toronto.
See ya. Yeah. See ya. Sorry about that. But Peak Pride's still going.
It is.
Thanks to me.
Oh, right. Thanks to you. So anyway,
yeah.
Tell us all about what you do.
Yeah, so I do a few things. All of them are, like, the hub is still, like, it always goes back to my obsession with pop culture. So right. talent management, being a booking agent for drag queens and other artists, doing my own podcast, throwing events, it always comes back to me trying to inject myself into that world.
Wannabe celebrity.
Exactly. That's what you can call, that's my new podcast, yeah. Wannabe Celebrity.
Yeah.
So my current, and I think like being entrepreneurial, you probably find this too, looking back on your projects, they're probably all anchored in something similar, like maybe being a project manager or a producer. We have those natural skills that we cultivate as entrepreneurs, and mine was always being a connector, bringing people yeah. together, being creative.
The community.
Yes, being a part of the community. And most recently has been working with, I say famous drag queens. Because they are. They're from Drag Race.
Yeah.
It's my first exposure to real celebrities. I love it. It's stressful. But yeah, that's my most recent talent, being a talent yeah. agent.
I know we talked about a bit before, and we're not going to highlight the... Because you do have a day job as well outside of mm-hmm. this. And I think, you know, there's many of us who are out there who are in our entrepreneur journeys who do still have a day job, because sometimes you got to supplement income, right? Because
yeah.
it doesn't always come quickly.
No, this is actually, when I was driving here, I was thinking about our time together in Kelowna. That was actually one of the most insecures I've ever been in my life, because I was 100% making my own money, and I was right. a talent agent, and I was doing events with you, and I felt like I could not fucking make money, and I felt like everybody around me had so much money. There was those guys who lived on Knox Mountain, and they had like a house that looked like the White House, and I'm like, how do they afford this? It just seems so mind-boggling that people didn't live paycheck to paycheck,
right.
and it was hard. Like, getting a day job was one of the hardest things I ever had to do,
yeah.
because as an entrepreneur and a creative, if you have a vision, it just feels like everything should line up. Like, if it feels so real, why is it this hard? Yeah. So now I know that with a day job, I can actually bring a lot more to my creative endeavors, because I don't have the financial stress.
Right.
And it's made it a lot more enjoyable again.
Yeah. It's not just about the dollar bill at the end.
Yes. Which it has to be. It.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
It's good.
The balance.
Yeah. Absolutely. What inspired you to... go out and start your own venture, but it's because you want to be a celebrity.
I want to be a celebrity, and I also don't like listening to people. I don't yeah. like, which I also I learned yeah. with collaborating with people mm-hmm. like you and other people that you're going to be interviewing today. There is a lot of compromise that comes with being an entrepreneur too, because if somebody's giving you money,
yeah.
that is a certain kind of relationship. So yes, wanting to be successful, get attention, blah, 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 but also... just ownership over your life, right? Yeah. Carving your own path.
It's true. What do you think has been your biggest challenge of being an entrepreneur so far?
the money.
It is money, yeah.
The money stress.
I agree.
And just equating being able to pay your bills, save money, go on vacations, buy clothes, go out for dinner with success. Because yeah. it's easy to quit your first day job and take that leap and rose-colored glasses and everything's going to work out. And then when it doesn't, and it doesn't again, and it doesn't again and again, you just, it sucks the life out of you. Yeah. And when you're a creative person, it's not enjoyable. There is literally no point. So that has been the biggest obstacle. And then failure, like just perceiving myself as not successful because I'm not a pop star or because I'm not a millionaire.
Yeah.
That comparing myself to other people has been really hard.
So how do you work through that sense of failure sometimes?
I had to completely, we talked about this a little bit when before we started recording, I had to move to Toronto because Evan got sick.
Right.
And we lived with his parents. I left everything I knew, all of my connections, all of my projects, all of my people like you behind. And I was forced to take a new direction.
Right.
And I got a job at a hotel doing weddings. And then I was doing different sales jobs. And that process of like letting go of the person I thought I was going to be for like quote unquote day jobs actually alleviated a lot of stress. I'm like, oh my God, who cares? Who cares if I have a day job?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that has made it easier for me to just brush off the insecurity. Not that it's not still there, but.
Well, and it happens, right? Like you're an entrepreneur. You got to do what you got to do to pay your bills and
yeah.
Right. And hustle. And whether it be a day job or take a contract you might not love or any number of things.
Yeah.
Right. So our work, you know, very long days and
yeah,
and
nonstop. You're never off.
No, really, you're not.
If you're an entrepreneur, you're never off.
Yeah. You really aren't. In your years of being an entrepreneur and the different ways that you have you ever experienced discrimination or biases for being queer?
I think I got pigeonholed because I was very much one thing. In Vancouver is when my entrepreneurial endeavor spirit muscles started to come out, and everything was about drag queens and parties and performing, and a lot of opportunity came my way, a lot of really cool opportunities. But whenever I tried to like do something, I would say more serious or more practical, it didn't really work. And I felt the only thing people wanted was crazy party, drag queens, Peter fucked up, which I didn't mind back then. So I think, I don't remember any discrimination, actually. But
that's a bias, being pigeonholed in a certain way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, though, because I really leaned into my sexuality as a brand in order to collaborate with me, that was, like, you couldn't really get around it.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why.
Okay. That's fair. We've talked about some of the challenges. Now I want to talk a bit more on the success side. So do you have a situation in the journey where it like really stands out as a success or achievement for you?
Oh my God. Wow. Okay. Let me think. Being an entrepreneur and also creative can be competing because creative ideas aren't necessarily marketable and don't necessarily make you money, which I've learned time and time again. A cool idea is a cool idea, but people aren't going to pay to come and see it necessarily. Two times in my life, my vision and my instinct paid off big.
Yeah.
One, I was at the Rio Theater here in Toronto, and they do a shadow cast for Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Okay.
And I went, I loved the concept, didn't really like the movie, but as I was watching it, I was trying to think of something that could replicate that formula, which is basically a movie with live performances in front of the movie.
Okay.
I was like obsessed instantly. And I thought of Spice World. And I'm like, I love the Spice Girls. What if we got drag queens to do Spice Girls? Spice World. I contacted the owner of the Rio, Corrine. Amazing. You should talk to her, actually. Yeah. Good friend of mine still. She loved the idea. We did it. It sold out like multiple nights. We ended up touring around Texas to different theaters.
Texas.
I know. I know. Drag queens in Texas. But
well, it's more just like Vancouver to Texas. Like
I know. But it's because there was a chain of theaters there that were similar to the Rio that got it. That was really exciting.
Yeah.
The second was there was a new club on Davie. Oh, it wasn't a new club. Oasis Ultra Lounge, which was above Denny's, was having a hard time. They kept rebranding, new owners.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, one of the new owners reached out to me to come in and do events. And I thought of doing a celebrity-themed party. So this hadn't really been done yet. And me and Chase and Parker did some underground parties that were really successful called DUI. But the one that I came up with completely on my own was Club La Lohan. And it was based on Lindsay Lohan. Definitely bad girl vibes.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would like celebrate that behavior now. But it went, I guess it was Facebook only because there was no Instagram, but it went viral in a way that everybody was changing their profile pictures to themselves in our virtual burn book based on Mean Girls. And it was like hundreds and hundreds of people came and lined up around the block.
Yeah.
Again, vision to like financial success. That doesn't happen all the time.
No,
and then third, like working with, I'd stopped being a talent agent for a while And I got a call out of the blue in Toronto from my friend Steve, who is Brooklyn Heights manager. Right. And he was looking for somebody to be a booking agent for drag queens from Drag Race, other people on his roster like Priyanka. And that was, that I felt was like the fruits of my labor 10 years ago, right, where an opportunity came my way that was actually financially lucrative that I actually didn't pursue, but because of the legwork I did 10 years ago. So if you are an entrepreneur, you don't really know what the work you're doing now, if it's not paying off, will come full circle. Yeah.
That's literally, I had a contract that, well, the contract hasn't come through. We've submitted the application, but a group reached out for me to facilitate a program that's like a 2-year contract and would be, in essence, the largest contract ever. So
yes.
I should know this week or next week, ideally, if they're getting the funding, but it might not be till the month.
Cool.
Who knows? You're always waiting,
that's
right?
Exciting.
So
pays off.
But
right?
You're right. Yeah. It's all the hard work that sometimes you don't see the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Really, right. You just feel like you're just grinding and grinding and grinding. Mm-hmm. And then something, you say it falls in your lap, but it's really, you've been working towards this. You just don't always know you're working towards
exactly.
It.
Exactly. Don't give up. That's the other thing, mm-hmm, is like, you never know how close you are to, agreed, like the payoff. It's, yeah, hard, but
I know
it's easy for us to say like 10, 15 years, 20 years.
Totally.
In. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause how, actually that's a good point. So never give up. When you're in those situations where you feel like you want to give up, how do you keep pushing through?
I've given up a lot of times. Like, I've been like, fuck it, I don't want to do it. But I've accepted that my creativity comes in waves. So okay. It's okay if I'm like silent for however long I need to be and then come back. But for me, the vision and the drive is a part of who I am. It's in my DNA. Right. I could never stop. I would die.
Yeah.
I would just like, I would cease to exist. So for me, it is not a choice. And I think practically, like with a project, if it's not getting where you want it, it's okay to just stop and start again, or like, true, change and give up, like put it away,
yeah,
and say you tried and then turn your focus on something else.
Wasn't that the definition of insanity? Just to keep doing the same thing over and over again, expect different results.
Yes.
So sometimes you need to take a step back, mm-hmm, and relook at things or try something different,
yeah,
or whatever. And that might be quitting, as you said, or, yeah, just stopping what you're doing, mm-hmm, before you restart.
Yeah.
So, gotta, I mean, the fact that you've come back to talent agent as well, or booking agent,
yeah,
shows that, yeah, you can take a break on things and still come back to,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and once you fucking get those, sorry, swearing, you, once you get fun, those skills, right? Like,
I don't fucking care.
Yeah.
So obviously, I think a lot of what you've done, especially on the event side, has been queer focused.
Uh-huh.
But how do you maintain authenticity in that, when you're obviously, you know, probably gearing more towards the queer community?
Huh?
Well, a lot of, maybe this question is not as relevant to you, but there's usually, because I think a lot of people I've talked with, they're not necessarily in a particular queer industry, right? Like, we organize events for queer people.
Right, right, right.
And so, you know, when you're marketing, doing promotion towards the queer community,
yeah,
how do you maintain
Oh, authenticity? Like, so that they know it's a queer person behind it?
Yeah, and it's not, okay, just pinkwashing, I guess, in a sense, right?
Oh, that's a really good question. And actually really interesting with what I do now, because RuPaul's Drag Race has turned into such a commodity,
yeah,
that what... Oh, this is really timely, actually. I feel like... I don't want this to be too controversial, but I do feel like the queer community is losing drag a little bit. We're losing our connection to it because it has been passed on through this machine over and over and over again for what, 15, 20 years now. And for me, working closely professionally with drag queens for so long, I feel like the magic is slowly starting to go, because it started as such a unique experience and such a rebellious thing and such a protest. Mm. And now fucking, you know, Mary Lou and Vernon with her kids who are 14 and 15 are watching RuPaul's Drag Race,
right,
coming to Peak Pride, having a great time, which is good. But I feel like as a queer person, I was thinking about this. What's the last gay thing? What's the last thing? I think it's the bathhouse. I don't know if we want to talk about that here, but what is one thing from, yeah, our queer community that hasn't been commodified and commercialized? So I think when you're selling to the queer community, they're very aware of the fact that it might act, you might be trying to cater to that community, but I think we all know that it's not just for us anymore.
Right.
And that's a good thing that we have more inclusion, but what is a queer specific space anymore? Like,
yeah,
you know, I don't know. I also don't go out as much, so it probably has changed a lot, but it's we're in this phase, and right, I don't know what queer culture will be in 20 years, to be honest.
No, well, that's like everything in life, right? It evolves. Yeah. And I think some interest point, like you talked about, what is a queer space? And last year when we had Peak Pride at Sun Peaks, there's a bar there called Bottoms. As there is. And they had big stickers. Well, actually, our party 2 nights ago was there.
Okay.
Like after the drag show. And they had a sticker that said Bottoms. It's like every bar is a gay bar. That they were. So, and just, but like.
I like that.
And I know, you know, when we do some of our shows, I think, I mean, Ella makes this comment where it's, you know, today this is a queer space and you're in our space today.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I think taking that ownership is important and setting the tone. And, well, you know, when I moved to Vancouver, they had this party at Celebrities on Tuesday nights that was promoted as a mixed party with straight hipsters.
Right. It was a college night kind of thing, right?
Yeah. And it was, at the time, amazing because we were dancing to Rihanna Umbrella with these straight art kids from SFU or whatever, and it felt very cutting edge and modern. Totally. Now, like, if you are 15 now, you are probably not the only out person in high school. There's a lot of pop culture that can tell a gay love story, or you can watch RuPaul's Drag Race, or you can follow trans influencers and find the messaging easily.
Yeah.
And you go into the world, you might not actually care or need to go to a gay bar necessarily if you have your community around you at home. Whereas you and I, we needed to find it. Like, you couldn't just go to the cowboy bar and be safe.
God, no, not at that time in Kelowna when we started those events. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
And I think another thing that I've found interesting with culture and, you know, drag's obviously a big part of what we do, but the comment was made this weekend when we were at Sun Peaks after our show on Saturday night, the Wipeout Drag Show. And it was from two guys from the States who have run similar events in Oregon. And he had come up to say that, like, that was so much fun. We really enjoyed it. Like, just the way the performers engage with the crowd, because I guess they're more accustomed to now where it's just, like, the drag queens and drag performers go around, like, give me money, right? Where it's just, it's coming and we're just here for the money.
Right.
And so I think it's a balance, too, right? Because it's become, I don't know where I'm going with that. It's an interesting, when you talk about drag becoming so much more, because that used to be like just for the queers, right?
Yeah,
it was our art form.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder too, you'd have to ask maybe Ella about this, is like performing for a queer audience versus like a corporate gig. That might pay you more, but then you know when it's your people, you might not care about the tips as much. I mean, you still want the money, honey. But you know, they're your people and you know that there is a special connection, not just, you know, the TD Bank.
No
shade to TD.
No.
We love them.
And I mean, there are certain things where it's a corporate gig and you do it for money. Like, I have gigs where I travel to and it's like, I'm just there to fucking make money.
Yeah.
Like, and I get paid well to do it. And that's what we do, right? Like, that's part of that balance, I think, sometimes. Is we do you do the gigs that are fun that you're not really going to make any money on because you want to support your community. But then you also do the big gigs where it is, like, where's the money?
We all sell our soul for something at some point, right? Yeah. Like, you need to make money, unfortunately. Capitalism, blah.
I think there's, I know everyone says that. I'm like, but when you're growing your business, you're still being capitalistic in a way. I mean,
you can do
it in a more ethical and responsible
way. But this
way.
Is the thing. Yeah. This is what I hate, is like, you have no choice but to like get a job and make money. Mm-hmm. And it sounds superficial, but we're all born into this capitalist system.
Yeah.
If you choose not to participate, you will die of hunger and you will be on the streets. And that's what irritates me, is like, why don't we have different, going back to the cults. What if I want to live without money on a commune with like people that I love and trust? Yeah. Then the government is like, you can't do that. You can't have more than one husband. Yes, I can. And I will.
Was that so? How have you found the queer community in terms of support of your entrepreneur endeavors?
Well, actually, when I was the first thing I did in Vancouver was music. And when I started that, I really thought, I'm going to release one song and all the gays across Canada are going to lift me up to the heavens, honey. I'm going to be Lady Gaga. And it was the opposite. They hated me. Like, whenever somebody would write something on a blog, it was like the nastiest. People would throw shit at me at the club. They were just really, really mean, because I think they didn't want anybody else, I don't know, representing them, or I was too gay. But there was no support. Like, I didn't feel a lot of support. There was a small community, but generally I felt like I was like a social pariah. Now, I don't know. It's still mixed. I mean, I was talking to another event promoter on the way here, actually. And we were talking about how hard it is to sell events these days. And it's part of the economy, I think. People have less money, even though they spend, like, how much money on Beyonce and Taylor Swift. It's harder.
Things that are parties, yeah.
Yes, it's harder to sell. So I don't know if that's a part of support, but I have experienced the sense of locally ignored, internationally adored, I think is the phrase, where sometimes in your own city, people don't show up because they know you, you've been doing it for a long time, and then you take something on the road and it's like the best thing people have ever seen.
It's true.
Yeah.
I mean, I think some of our events, like, I mean, because Kelowna, for example, is quite oversaturated.
Yeah.
Right? In terms of drag and
that's
queer
crazy
stuff.
Where we when I was there, there was like...
That was 6 years ago, yeah, 7 years seven, ago, right? Yeah. That was a very different thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we were doing Fruitcake, like, we would sell out just whatever you want. Like, there was the odd one that usually once, twice a year in kind of January, February, when they were usually a little quieter. But, you know, yeah, we sold them out for years. Yeah. And then, but now there's Queerphoria. There's another drag performer who doesn't deserve to be mentioned. Oh.
Sparkle.
So, no, that's a whole other story. But, like, we go to
what's
places.
What's Queerphoria?
They're another group in town that's doing queer events.
Like nightlife?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we've actually, after Halloween last year, I said, I'm not doing events that I have to run a bar anymore. That was one thing. I'm like, I'm just done.
Yeah.
It's too much work with not enough rewards. And there are groups like Queerphoria that are doing some similar stuff. So I'm like, I don't need to do it.
Yeah.
Like, I can focus on these other ones, like our big touring shows that we do, when those ones we make money on.
Yeah.
Like, when we bring a performer in, we'll do usually a Kelowna Kamloops show. We make the money on Kamloops because my expenses are a fraction of what they're in Kelowna. And we sell more because they don't have that type of entertainment. We are starting to see it now trickle up, and we've been having these conversations about, like, we kind of start things and then we move to different places. And, like, other people start taking, because they see that we're doing well. And so they start trying to chip away at what we've done.
Do you find that when you started, there was resentment in what you were doing because you were starting so many things that hadn't been done in Kelowna and being successful? What did you feel for support?
I think overall we were supported in what we did because, like, at the beginning, but there are always are people who are resentful and they're like, we are not paying us enough, we're not doing this. Like, but people understand the back end of what things cost and all of that.
Mm.
I think that's probably more... The
it's
challenge at that point, it is.
To throw parties.
Especially when you start talking about fucking insurance, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
But I want to talk a little more on challenges.
Okay.
And this one specific to, do you feel that being a queer, a gay entrepreneur is more challenging than being a straight entrepreneur? And why?
First of all, I'm white and I'm a man, and I do, like, look back, especially one of my best friends, Jem, who you've had on the show. When we compare life
not
stories.
On the show, a different show. Which
a different show. That you all know. When you compare, when I compare journeys with people who are different identifying than me, it's very different. Oh. And I've already said that I think, like, oh, yeah, I just leaned into being gay and all the doors flew open. That's a privilege. And I even, like... Is it more challenging for me than a straight person? I don't know because I haven't lived their shoes. But I also think that a sense of confidence and ownership over who you are makes it easier to create opportunity. But in order to have that confidence and self-actualization, you need to be supported and loved from a really young age and not feel othered. Right. So it's definitely easier for straight people because the world is catered to them. But I think queer people can still take advantage of opportunities by owning who they are and not letting it stand in their way.
Well, and part of the reason I ask them these questions like this is to show that no matter what your upbringing is, there are ways to be successful.
Yes.
It's going to look different to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And what success looks like is going to be different for everyone.
Yes.
Okay. So on that success front, what does success in business look like to you?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's hard to take money out of business.
Yeah.
For me now, I feel successful if I wake up and I'm not dying of anxiety, basically. And I actually go through my priority list often in my head. Is like, number one is health, and that includes spiritual, physical, emotional health first, then it's my relationship with Evan and the people that I love, and then it's my job.
Okay.
Whereas before, I think it was opposite, and that trickles down. So if you lose your health, you have no fucking nothing. Money does not matter. So I try and keep that priority now. And since doing that, I have seen more success in other areas of my life because I'm less clingy to making money. It's like, if it comes, it comes. But ultimately, when I die, I'm going to be thinking about, well, hopefully I'm at peace internally, and then the people that were in my life.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
I'm going to transition now. I'm going to do my lightning round.
Okay. Oh, fuck.
It's just this or that. Yeah. It's don't think about it. Don't overanalyze it. I don't need a fucking description.
Okay.
And I tell it to everyone, and they still give me fucking descriptions. Okay. So.
I'm ready.
Okay. Dinner at a fancy restaurant or a home-cooked meal?
Home-cooked meal.
Multiple short vacations or one long vacation a year?
Multiple shorts.
Agreed. Mexico or Hawaii?
Never been to Hawaii. So Hawaii.
Okay. Yeah. Would you rather watch a movie or go to live music?
Movie. Watch a movie.
Spain or Portugal?
Spain.
I got Vancouver, Victoria, which area was that we're at now, so it doesn't work as well. Okay, let's go Kelowna or Victoria.
Kelowna. Excellent. Kelowna-fornia, baby.
Toronto or Montreal?
At this point, Montreal, because I just moved from that stupid city.
Early riser or like to sleep
early
in?
Early riser, baby, 6 a.m.
If you have a choice of either option, driving or flying?
Driving, actually.
Okay. Audiobooks or real books?
Real books.
Debit or credit card for your business?
Credit. Oh, yeah, credit.
Do you use a bank or credit union for business?
Bank.
Okay. Dog or cat?
Dog.
Spotify or Apple Music?
Spotify.
Are you a popcorn lover?
Yes.
Excellent. What about pineapple on a pizza?
Yeah, sure. Just no mushrooms.
There's only one kind of mushrooms I like.
Oh.
Okay, just like one or short answers for these. Your favorite type of music?
Pop.
Shocking. Favorite time of year?
Winter.
Favorite place to travel for vacation?
Penticton.
That's good.
I love Skaha Lake.
Okay, fair enough. That makes sense. Okay, so I just have a couple final questions to kind of wrap things up today. Mm-hmm. This first one you've identified and talked about a bit in terms of like health and spirituality, but tell me how you handle work-life balance and self-care as an entrepreneur.
I am reading this book right now called Your Job Won't Love You Back.
Yeah.
And I basically always have I have an anarchist spirit. I like that there's a part of me that's always like burn it down, like fuck society, not fuck society, but like,
what you mean,
like the powers that be.
Right.
So the way that I maintain my work-life balance is similar to keeping my mental health, spiritual health, physical health in check, is remembering that the people that I do business with may or may not actually care about me as a person, and it's a financial exchange. And I want to never prioritize that over my personal life.
Love it.
Yeah.
That's great. I think that's a great answer. How about any tips or strategy for building resilience with your business?
Failure, baby.
Yeah.
There is no bigger like resiliency builder than failing and getting back up and doing it again. And so yeah, fail hard. Again. Oprah says the same thing.
I mean, that was what, 4 years, first 3 or 4 years of Peak Pride was
loss. I know, yeah.
Not that we're like rolling in coin now, but we're not losing money. We've adjusted the model to do that. Do you have any entrepreneurs that inspire you, you look up to?
You.
Oh, that's cute.
You know who's really inspired me recently? Jimbo.
Okay.
Jimbo inspired me because he went on Drag Race late 30s, recently won All Stars. I think he's in his 40s now. Not that age matters, but you do identify. When you see somebody who isn't 20, you're like, good for you, honey.
Right.
So Jimbo...
I think it's great.
Because
I see a lot of it now, too, like a lot of his stuff now too, because of what they're doing, and like it's so out there. But that's the type of content you need to really stand out. You can't just be normal. I fucking hate that word.
And he is self-actualized. Like you can tell he knows who he is, and that's why he's been able to succeed. Jimbo, I've been thinking about a lot, but people like you, Tommy D, Jason Matlow, Michael Venus, people who've been in my life for a long time that are doing the damn thing, I always find inspirational because I can talk to you.
Right.
We can collaborate.
We get it. Yes.
Yes. And I feel like you're real people. You're not just celebrities, even though I wish you were.
I'm a behind-the-scenes celebrity. Yes, thank you very much.
Kris Jenner.
And so my last question that I like to kind of wrap things up with is, what advice would you give to a queer individual who's considering becoming an entrepreneur?
Oh, my God. Okay. I've said a few times that it's like I have that anarchist spirit and like mm-hmm. capitalism and billionaires. And that's mostly tongue-in-cheek because I think having big dreams is important. Agreed. And if that's what you crave, then you should go and do it. Be mindful. But the biggest piece of advice I wish I could give myself is don't focus so much on the outcome. Really put one foot in front of the other and make sure every step of the way you're doing everything you can to build that vision and not letting it deviate you, because you can't control the future, but you can control what you're doing right now.
Agreed.
One foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
And pay me.
So really that's just start, right?
Just start and keep going. And it's okay to change, but like,
totally.
Don't get so caught up in like the success. Yeah. It will come or it won't, but you just got to keep trying.
Well, you're right. Some things aren't going to be successful. They're going to be a failure, but you've got to learn.
Yeah.
Right. So awesome. Well, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Dustin.
I appreciate it. Yes. Yeah, I know. Many more things to come.
Yes,
right?
For sure. Am I the most famous person that's been on your show? Tell me the truth.
Are we talking about like Instagram followers or?
No. People know me. Hey, I'm blurry.
I don't know why I just started doing that.
I think I went forward.
No, I think it's the battery's cutting out. So anyway, thank you for being on the podcast. Thank you for tuning in.
I'll be back.
I've heard that a few times from people. I want to come back now. Thanks for tuning in to Queerpreneurs Unleashed. We'll see you next time.
That was fun.